text. Hallmark Channel presents Crown Media Productions. An ornate antique clock, a round face with Roman numerals mounted in wood painted red with gold edges. Text, a timeless Christmas.
Going once, going twice. Sold to Mr. Charles Whitley, this beautiful antique Christmas clock. Our next item up for bid is magnificent chaise lounge, perfect for the home. We'll start the bidding at $10.
A man in the crowd follows the clock's buyer to the back of the hall.
$20. Yes, ma'am, up front. $30.
$30.
The gentleman in the hat.
Well done, Whitley. That's a one-of-a-kind piece.
Inscription.
True love will find you soon. Do I hear $50? Certainly you've already found true love. You have a beautiful fiancée in Miss Eliza Parker.
Indeed. And it is to be her Christmas gift.
Very romantic, Whitley.
I'm surprised you didn't try to steal it out from under me, Moran. That is your preferred method of operation, I believe.
Now, it's almost Christmas. Can't we let bygones be bygones? I hear through the grapevine you're having trouble with this new modern milling system you're working on. Why don't we team up?
I wouldn't work with you if you were the last engineer on the planet, Moran.
$30.
Charles, you and I are cut from the same cloth. Surely we can find some common ground.
I've seen the way you look at my fiancée. It appears you're already trying. But I can assure you, you will fail on all counts. Merry Christmas to you, sir.
40? Do I hear 40? 40, yes. Front.
You know I don't believe he means that.
Do I hear $50?
A horse-drawn carriage rolls down a snowy road to the entrance of a white mansion with an entrance by pillars. Charles steps out of the carriage holding a box. A butler in a tuxedo appears in the front door.
Welcome home, sir. How was the city?
It was the city.
He hands him the box. Two wreaths hang on the doors.
Two wreaths, Fredericks. Isn't that a bit excessive?
Rosie's idea, sir. You know how people are during the holidays? They do like to celebrate.
I assume you've already arranged the annual Christmas Eve party for the household staff.
It'll be in the kitchen as usual. You're always welcome to join us, of course, huh?
Well, I appreciate the invitation every year, Fredericks. I'm afraid merrymaking is a luxury I can't afford with so much work to do and so little time to do it.
Now, where have I heard that excuse before?
Eliza, Fredericks didn't tell me you were here.
Don't blame Fredericks. I wanted to surprise you.
He kisses her cheek.
The smiling face of my fiancée is the perfect welcome home gift.
I'm afraid my visit isn't entirely innocent.
Do I hear an ulterior motive in your voice?
It's about my mother and father's Christmas party. You know it's the social event of the season. All of the most important people are going to be there. Won't you please just reconsider?
Eliza, I'm sorry, but I just can't. I simply have too much to do to go parading off to Manhattan for a party, Christmas or otherwise.
Is it the party, Charles? Or is it me?
You know I've been busy modernizing them now. I have an entirely new system to put into place, and I need it operational by next year.
Next year. You're always living for the future, Charles.
And why not? The future's an exciting place. It's full of possibilities and new ideas and new inventions. I've even heard a rumor of two brothers in North Carolina who are working on a flying machine.
What about the present? What about being here with me now?
But I am here with you now.
But you're not with me here.
She puts her hand on her heart.
Pardon me, Mr. Whitley. I took the liberty of making you both some hot cocoa. It's terribly cold outside, and I thought...
Thank you, Rosie. But I'm afraid I'm not really in a hot cocoa mood today.
Charles' brow furrows. The maid frowns.
If you need me, Charles, I'll be at my parents' townhouse in the city. That is, if you have the time.
Eliza walks out of the sitting room. Charles watches her go, frowning. Nighttime at the mansion. Charles sits at a large wooden desk writing. The Christmas clock sits on the desk in front of him. He closes his notebook and sets it aside. He rolls back a rug on the floor and lifts a panel from the floorboards, revealing a small secret chamber. In it he places a rolled up piece of paper in the notebook. He replaces the floorboards.
Mr. Mr. Whitley?
Come in, Rosie.
He sits at the desk.
Fredericks has retired for the evening, and I'm about to do the same myself. Will there be anything else?
Oh, no, that'll be all. Thank you, Rosie.
Oh, that's lovely, sir.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
It's for Eliza. For Christmas. Foolishly, I didn't check to make sure it was working at the auction house. I was too distracted by that imbecile Moran.
It's broken?
Well, that's what I thought at first, but it appears that one of the springs has been cut. Like someone deliberately wanted to stop the clock.
Hmm. Oh, you've had it engraved. Wind once at Christmas moon. True love will find you soon. A very sweet sentiment, Mr. Whitley.
You know me well enough to know I didn't have it engraved myself, Rosie. It came that way. I don't even know what a Christmas moon is.
Well, one can always hope.
I hope that I can have it fixed in time. Eliza certainly deserves something that works.
As do you, sir.
Is this about to become one of your infamous lectures?
No, sir. I wouldn't dare. I'm just a maid.
Rosie, you have been in my employ nearly 10 years. You are anything but just a maid. My friend.
Well, forgive me, sir. You're both such fine people, but if I may say, a more mismatched pair I've never seen.
Well, I think Eliza and I get along very well.
But, sir, there's more to marriage than just getting along. And I would hate to see the both of you make a mistake.
Well, there's no mistake to make. I have considered the situation from all possible vantage points, and the truth of the matter is that a man of my age and position is expected to be married by now.
But, sir, don't you think that true love is worth waiting for?
Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Either way, how is one to know when it shows up?
She shakes her head.
Time will tell, Mr. Whitley. Time will tell.
He smiles slightly.
Good night, sir.
Good night.
Rosie walks out of the study. Charles leans back and looks at the clock. Above the house, a moon glows in the night sky. Charles tinkers with the gears and springs in the back of the clock. He replaces the clock's back panel and opens the small wooden door on top. He winds the clock and closes it again. He turns the ticking clock to face him and regards it, frowning. He stands and places the clock on a high shelf. Clouds pass over the misty moon. Charles lays out tools on a table. He looks over his shoulder at the clock as it makes noise. Its hands spin violently. His mouth opens and his brows raise. The clock spins faster and faster and appears over his face. Charles faints and the moon engulfs the clock face. A portrait of Charles in a suit hangs on a wall. A brunette woman stands before it wearing a black and white maid's dress. She speaks to a tour group.
And this, of course, is the owner of the mansion and my employer, Mr. Charles Whitley. He was born in 1870. When he was 14, his parents died and he was sent to work at a steel mill. Fortunately, Mr. Whitley was a very smart inventor, so by the time he was 21, he was a millionaire. Then, 10 years later, he just disappeared.
Where'd he go?
Nobody really knows. A week before Christmas, December 18th, 1903, Mr. Whitley just mysteriously vanished. And nobody has been able to figure out the mystery of where he went or why.
Charles lays on a carpet with sunlight shining on his face. He lifts his head, then hauls himself upright, leaning on his desk. He shakes his head and blinks, looking around. He sees a sign over his desk that reads, "Do not touch." The items on his desk are encased in glass.
Oh, Rosie! What was in that sherry?
He traces his hand over the glass. He wears a short robe and cravat. He gapes up at a security camera in a corner under a sign that reads, "Smile, you're on camera."
What the deuce?
Would any of our guests care for a homemade cookie freshly baked from our kitchen?
Fredericks, you are indeed the finest butler in this county. I don't know what Mr. Whitley would do without you.
Well, let us hope he never has cause to find out, Fredericks?
Oh, Miss Eliza, I do believe you're teasing me.
The man dressed in a butler's tux turns on his heel from the women dressed as Rosie and Eliza. Charles stumbles in the hall.
Rosie! Rosie! Fredericks! What is all this?
And who are all these lovely people?
These are some very special visitors who've come to see the mansion at Christmas time. They're hoping to catch a glimpse of Mr. Whitley himself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm afraid my fiancé is unable to be here today. He was called away on business.
Charles appears.
No, he wasn't. He's standing right there.
Excuse me. What are you people doing in my house? I would appreciate an answer, please.
Well, hello. Mr. Whitley, we didn't expect you today.
You weren't expecting me in my own home. Who are you?
Oh, you're having fun with me, sir. You know, I'm your maid, Rosie.
You most certainly are not.
Charles, you're such a tease. You know this is Rosie, just as you know I'm your fiancé, Eliza Parker.
Now forward, my goodness, control yourself.
Kenny never told me about a new Charles.
He looks just like him.
The maid stares up at the portrait.
It does.
Where did all these Christmas decorations come from? I did not authorize this expenditure. Fredericks! Fredericks!
A cue already?
Butler.
Who's this guy? I mean, good morning, Mr. Whitley.
This is madness. What have you done with Fredericks?
Hey, can I get a selfie?
I beg your pardon.
Thanks.
Enough. I demand that you people leave my home or I will inform the authorities.
You're all right, everyone. If you'd like to follow me, we have some lovely Christmas ornaments for sale in the gift shop.
The guests follow the fake Eliza. The maid eyes the butler.
Let's go get Kenny. Yeah.
The butler scurries off with his tray. Charles pauses in the hall and looks at his portrait.
When did this arrive?
That painting has been here over 100 years.
It most certainly has not. I just sat for it last week.
Okay, just between you and me, you're coming on a little strong with the visitors. Why don't you just relax a bit?
I come downstairs to find my home full of strangers, and I am told to relax?
You know, you've already put so much on my plate. I haven't got time for this today, Megan.
The butler and Kenny rush in. Kenny stops in his tracks and looks from Charles to the portrait.
Wow.
Yeah, the resemblance is amazing. Where did you find him?
I didn't find him. The agency must have sent him over here last minute.
Well, they could have given us a heads up. He completely ruined my timing.
What are you people talking about?
Didn't they tell you? Our last Charles Whitley quit.
Your last?
The actor who played him. The one you're replacing.
Well, I'm not replacing anyone.
We've all been there. No shame in recasting, unless you're the one being recast.
I've had enough of this madness.
Where are you going? The tour is not over yet.
I'm going to find my driver, and we are going to find the sheriff.
The employees share a glance, then follow Charles outside. Charles' eyes widen. He points to cars.
What are these? What is this?
You mean the cars? What?
He looks up at a plane in the sky.
A flying machine.
Don't think he's from the agency.
Of course I'm not from the agency.
Then who are you?
I am Charles Whitley.
The employees raise their brows. Charles goes back inside. Later, carolers stand at the door. The guests file out.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you so much for coming. Oh, don't forget about our Christmas Eve party. Thank you.
Kenny and Megan.
Well, he's definitely not from the talent agency. They just called me. The guy they had lined up for us had to cancel.
Well, so who is he?
No idea. I think I should call the sheriff.
Oh, we can probably just ask him to leave. He seems harmless.
He also seems convinced that he's the real Charles Whitley.
Megan tilts her head. Kenny goes inside. Christmas lights on a tree flicker on and off. Charles scowls at the cord, unplugging it. Fake Eliza and the butler.
Dan, honey, you were a little slow on your entrance. Need to pick up the pace a bit.
Amber, it's not Shakespeare.
And these run on some form of electricity. And the bulbs, they're not Edison. They don't generate any heat.
I got to hand it to the guy. He is committed to the part.
Well, that's because I'm not playing a part.
Whatever you say, Charles.
Well, that costume you're wearing is absolutely perfect. Look at all the detail work, all hand-sewn.
Well, I did have it made by the finest tailor in New York City. What does that sound?
My tea.
Amber takes her mug. Charles touches it and recoils.
And it's hot. This device, it heats things with some form of radiation.
Yeah, makes pretty good popcorn, too.
Remarkable. Have I really traveled through all this time?
Excuse me?
Megan trots in.
Excuse me. Hi. It looks like there was some sort of a misunderstanding here, so I think it'd be best if you just leave.
Why would I leave my own house?
Well, maybe because it's not your house.
Look, who exactly are you people?
I'm Megan Turner. I'm the museum director. That's Amber, and this is her husband, Dan.
Fredericks, at your service.
Kenny comes in.
He's still here?
And this is my assistant director, Kenny.
I'm also operations manager.
Call the sheriff.
I think I left the front door open. Excuse me.
And so all of this is some sort of performance?
We do a reenactment of Christmas at the Whitley Mansion, just like it was back in 1903. Megan is actually related to the real Rosie.
You?
In fact, she was my great-great-grandmother.
She was.
He blinks and his lips twitch. Megan watches him.
May I ask, what year is it exactly?
They eye Charles.
What year do you think it is?
Charles turns to the Christmas tree, brow furrowed.
That's certainly not 1903.
They narrow their eyes at him. Megan rushes.
Excuse me, where are you going?
To my study.
Your study?
Yes, my study. If I retrace my steps, I can figure out how I went to sleep last night and woke up 100 years later.
Wait, you actually think you're from the past?
Well, I don't think so. I know so.
I hate to break it to you, but you're not Charles Whitley. He vanished December 18th, 1903, and was never seen again.
Well, I'm very flattered that you think you know so much about me.
I wrote my PhD dissertation about you, about him.
She smiles tightly.
And you're really kin to Rosie.
Yes, we're kin, on my mom's side.
Well, then you're very lucky to come from such a family. She's a very wonderful lady. Was a very wonderful lady. Look, the thing is, I have responsibilities waiting for me back in 1903. I have people counting on me, and I have a business to run.
You know how this sounds, right?
Of course I know how this sounds. That doesn't stop it from being the truth. I was right here at my desk trying to repair a clock that I bought for Eliza for Christmas. Rosie brought me some sherry, and then she left. And then I started to feel very dizzy. It was probably the sherry. And then I fell, and that's the last thing I remember before waking up here.
Megan purses lips.
You don't believe me?
Well, it just seems kind of impossible.
Don't you think I know that? I feel like I'm in that book, The Time Machine.
I love H.G. Wells.
Well, you wouldn't love him if you met him. He's a great writer, but he has terrible table manners.
Charles goes downstairs.
Wait, you met H.G. Wells?
Wait.
Hi, Megan. Look who dropped by.
Sheriff Conway.
Merry Christmas, Megan.
Sheriff, good you're here. I'm sure you were called to my account. A strange man shows up claiming to be Charles Whitley, claims that this is his home. I'm sure you have questions. We may as well take care of that now. There's one thing I hate. It's wasting time. Shall we?
Okay, then.
Charles and the sheriff walk out into the officer's car.
Thank you for your cooperation, Mr. Whitley. We really appreciate you coming down to the station.
Oh, wait.
Megan hands Charles his coat.
Oh, it's cold out here.
Thank you.
A scar on his hand.
You still don't believe me, do you? You said that most of the house has been preserved.
I think so. Why?
Under the rug beneath my desk, there's a hidden compartment in the floor. Look inside.
Mr. Whitley?
You might find your proof.
He sits in the back of the car. He looks at Megan and smiles slightly from the sheriff's back seat. The sheriff drives away. Megan turns and goes inside. She studies the portrait of Charles, noting his hand which bears no scar. Amber comes from a door by the staircase and joins Megan.
So what's going to happen to the new Charles Whitley?
I don't know.
He was pretty cute, huh?
I hadn't really noticed.
Megan, how long has it been since you broke up with your ex? 6 months. Don't you think it's time you started noticing again?
Megan pats Amber's arm and smiles. Amber leaves Megan by the painting. Megan enters the study. She strides across the floor and taps her boot on the rug. She purses her lips and taps around the desk. Her jaw drops. She falls to her knees and knocks on the floor with her hand. She whips back the rug and sees the hidden floor panel. She pries up the panel with her fingers. Inside, the paper and objects left by Charles, now covered with dust and cobwebs. She picks up the leather-bound notebook and blows off a cloud of dust. She opens the pages and sees mechanical sketches and scrawling handwriting. A sketch dated December 18, 1903. She turns the page and finds the rest of the notebook blank. Her mouth is still open in shock. She looks up and smiles, eyes wide. The police station.
Name?
Charles James Whitley.
Birth date?
June the 6th, 1807.
The sheriff looks him up and down.
Look, Mr. Whitley, I appreciate your cooperation here, but it's not going to do you any good to falsify an official county document.
I'm not falsifying anything, sir. I'm telling you the truth.
So, you expect me to believe that you're 150 years old?
Excuse me, Sheriff. I think I can help with that.
Megan enters the office and beams down at Charles. The sheriff scowls.
So, why didn't you people just tell me he was an actor in the first place?
Well, we didn't know that he was from the talent agency at first, but then after that, later, we found out he was from the talent agency.
Why didn't you say anything?
Because it's an immersive theater experience. Part of the program we offer at the museum. You see, he was hired to portray Charles Whitley, and he has to remain in character throughout the day, no matter what happens. His real name is Charles.
She glances at pine decorations.
Garland.
Is this true?
Every word of it.
Charles and Megan leave the station.
Why did you make up that ridiculous story?
Because if I tried to tell them the truth, they would have locked us both up.
I thought you didn't believe me.
I didn't at first, but then I saw the scar on your hand. Charles Whitley got into an accident when he was 18 years old at a steel mill and left a horseshoe-shaped scar on his hand. But he didn't want anybody to know about it, so it didn't show up in any pictures or paintings of him.
You really did study me, didn't you?
And then I found this.
What happened to my notebook?
I think it looks pretty good for something that's been under the floor for 100 years. I realize it's crazy, and I cannot believe I'm saying this, but it is very nice to meet you, Charles Whitley.
He bows subtly. Nighttime, a diner.
What is the name again of this fantastic dish we've just eaten?
Oh, pizza.
It's delicious. You know, this establishment used to be the blacksmith, except my horse is here.
Maybe just keep that between us for now. Until we figure out what happened, the fewer people who know the truth about you, the better.
I suppose you're right. No one would believe me anyway.
Actually, I'm afraid they would. Your disappearance is one of the greatest mysteries of Cutter Springs. I mean, the last thing you want is a bunch of reporters chasing you around or a scientist sticking you in a lab to find out what makes you tick.
Well, I shall be the very picture of discretion. $23. This is highway robbery.
Don't worry. No, it's my treat.
No. Please, I insist. A gentleman always pays.
Charles pats his pockets. He folds his hands in front of him.
It appears that I have come away without my billfold.
Honestly, it's okay. Times have changed.
I certainly have. I should thank you. You've been very kind to me, a total stranger.
Oh, you're not a stranger to me. I've read all of your journals and your letters.
All of them?
I had to be thorough for my dissertation.
Well, then you must certainly have an affection for history.
Actually, I'm going to teach it at the university. I have my final interview for the position next week.
You're not happy at the museum?
Oh, no, I love my job at the Whitley. It's so rewarding, you know, making history come to life for people.
May I?
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
So then why leave?
Well, I come from an academic family. Both my parents were teachers. My grandfather was a professor at the university. So I guess it's just always been part of the plan.
For them or for you?
Megan takes the receipt.
Thank you.
She and Charles walk out onto the snowy sidewalk. The diner's pillars are wrapped in lights.
All this electric lighting must cost a fortune.
Actually, most of it is solar powered.
I mean, someone finally figured out how to harness the power of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
He grins.
They decorated the streets like this back in 1903, didn't they?
I suppose. To be honest, I never paid much attention. I always thought Christmas was quite a bit of bother for just a few weeks of the year. Eliza loves it, though.
He pulls back the corner of his mouth.
What is it, Mr. Whitley?
Just thinking of the last time I saw Eliza. We had a bit of a row.
What about?
Inconsequential, really. Her parents' Christmas party. She wanted me to attend. I said no, of course. I hope she's all right. I hope she was all right. It feels strange to speak of her in past tense. You studied my life. You know what happened to her after I disappeared?
I don't know exactly.
Charles nods, then looks around the street.
I recognize this street. Come on.
He leads her past giant nutcracker statues and points.
What is this?
He wanders forward, looking around.
My building, the Whitley Steel Building, was right here. What happened to it?
It's been gone for years. When you disappeared, there were no instructions for your financial holdings.
I plan to leave it all to Eliza, of course, as my wife.
But you weren't married, and you had no heirs. Your company went to receivership, and it closed.
What?
The building and all your assets were liquidated. The city even took your mansion and turned it into a museum.
So I have nothing.
You have your name. Charles Whitley means something here in Cutter Springs.
But you said I can't tell anyone who I really am.
He looks down.
I can't let this happen. I have to go back to 1903 and stop this. Mr. Turner, I need your help. I have to find a way back.
They meet each other's gaze. Nighttime, the museum. Charles and Megan enter a bedroom and turn on the lights.
What's happened to my bedroom?
It was renovated a few years ago. We use a couple of the rooms for weddings and overnight visitors.
Excuse me?
That's, what's wrong?
Well, I'm not sure that it's entirely appropriate for me to be alone in my bedroom with a young lady unchaperoned.
It's okay. Times have changed.
He raises a brow.
So you keep telling me. How am I supposed to see myself in this mirror?
That is not a mirror. That's a television.
A what?
I'll explain it to you tomorrow. Is there anything else I can get for you?
Oh, no, thank you. I found my toiletry case in a display cabinet downstairs.
Oh, I don't think you want to use this 100-year-old toothpaste.
Oh.
Dust comes out.
There's a fresh tube and soap and towels in the bathroom down the hall.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
She smiles, hands folded.
Welcome to the 21st century.
I just hope I can learn to navigate it.
Don't worry, Mr. Whitley. There's got to be a way to get you back to your time. All we have to do is find it.
Well, in the meantime, I would ask a favor.
Sure.
Please stop calling me Mr. Whitley. My friends call me Charles.
Okay. Only if you call me Megan.
Agreed. Good night, Megan.
Good night, Charles.
Megan exits to the hallway. She looks at the door, her lips twisting into a smile. Charles sits on the bed, then leaps up and pulls the TV remote from under him. An animation of Santa dances on screen. Charles aims the remote and pushes a button. He sets the remote down and looks around the room, rubbing his hands together. Daytime. Kenny marches through the house followed by actors in maid and butler uniforms.
The Christmas Eve party is our most important fundraiser of the year. The day of, I'm going to need fresh pine boughs here, here, and here. Two wreaths there and two wreaths there. I'm also going to need a champagne pyramid. Well, actually, let's make it two champagne pyramids. I want this to be the best Christmas Eve party the Whitley Mansion has ever seen.
Charles comes downstairs in a robe.
Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, what are you doing here?
I was just going to get a bit of breakfast. Kitchen is still this way, or has that been moved as well?
Megan comes in.
Good morning.
Megan, what's going on?
Turns out you were right. Mr. Garland is from the agency.
Mr. Garland?
Yes, it was all just a misunderstanding.
These things happen.
He's from out of town, so I told him he could stay in the guest room.
How nice for Mr. Garland. Well, people do seem to enjoy your take on the role. They really like it when you get all worked up over having strangers in the house. The first tour is at 11. Be ready by 10:45. In costume, please.
Kenny nods archly and leaves. They go to the kitchen.
What did you mean by that?
I think you just became the new Mr. Whitley.
You telling me that I'm to be a part of the show? I can't do that. I don't have time for that. I have to figure out my situation.
If these cookies need just a little more icing. Mm-hmm. Well, what better place to do that than here, where nobody's going to ask you any questions about who you really are? And besides, couldn't you use the 21st century money?
He shrugs.
Well, what would I have to do?
Just be yourself.
He blinks with a furrowed brow. Carolers in the entry.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly. La 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 la.
Merry Christmas. Welcome to Christmas at the Whitley Mansion. This wing has been kept exactly as it was for 120 years, ever since the mysterious disappearance of Mr. Whitley in December 1903, a week before Christmas. No one has been able to figure out the puzzle of where he went or why, but he's with us today, so maybe we'll get to ask him ourselves. Mr. Whitley?
Come in.
Guests enter the study, where Charles leans on his desk in a suit.
We have some visitors to see you, sir.
Hello.
The guests stare.
They've come a very long way to meet you, Mr. Whitley.
That's very nice.
So what are you working on?
A new milling system.
That sounds very interesting. Would you like to tell us more about that?
Well, it's, it's for the mill.
His lips twitch. The guests look at each other, some holding up their mobile phone cameras.
Okay. I can see you're very busy. So we will be on our way, and maybe next time you'll have more to say.
She turns and leads the guests out.
Oh, and by the way, don't believe a word that she says.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Whitley?
Oh, you heard me, Rosie. She'll tell you all that she deserves all the credit for my success.
I've said no such thing.
Oh, nonsense. You're always telling me how helpless you think I am.
Well, I wouldn't say completely helpless.
She thinks I can't even put on my shoes in the morning.
Of course you can, sir. Especially after I wrote on the soles, left foot, right foot.
Touché.
Follow me, everyone.
Charles bows his head and Megan exits with the guests. Charles talks to guests in the dining room.
Well, the Christmas Eve party was originally Frederick's idea. But over the years, it's taken on a life of its own.
All right, I think we have time for one more question for Mr. Whitley.
Hey, I've got a question. Who is smarter, you or Harold Moran?
Well, that's not even a question. Harold Moran is a thief. He steals ideas. He's a rapscallion and a rogue, and he doesn't have an ethical bone in his body.
So how did you feel when you found out he married?
Okay, I think we have bothered Mr. Whitley enough for today. What do you say we all go to the gift shop?
Amber charges forth.
Right this way. Follow me.
The guests follow Amber.
Thank you for coming.
Charles turns to Megan.
Well, how did I do?
I have to say, you are the best Charles Whitley I've ever met.
She smiles and walks away. Charles frowns and picks up a sugar cookie with poinsettia icing. He takes a bite and chews, pauses, then chews enthusiastically. Guests walk out of the sitting room. They pat Charles on the shoulder as they pass.
Awesome job.
Thank you. Thank you.
Amber comes downstairs behind Charles.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Please, allow me.
Thank you. I've got it.
I really am sorry.
He picks up her book, Scene Study for Actors.
I'm afraid where I come from, actors are not held in very high esteem. Just a divorce thief.
That might have been a better choice.
You don't enjoy it?
Oh, I love acting, but this isn't quite the career I'd hoped for.
How so?
Oh, Dan and I met in a show in Summerstock, and after we got married, the work kind of dried up. We saw an ad for this museum looking for performers for the Christmas season, and, well, here we are. Not exactly Broadway. More like off Broadway.
Well, you're still an actor. And they do say all the world's a stage, no matter where it is.
You really think so?
Not in the habit of lying to complete strangers. Besides, I think you're both quite good.
He hands her the book. She looks down at it and smiles. Megan types on a computer. On the screen, a draft invitation. Whitley Mansion requests the pleasure of your company to experience a Victorian Christmas. Charles enters.
Hello.
Hi.
He looks at the screen.
What is this?
A computer.
Like a calculating device?
Kind of. I'm checking on the RSVP list for the e-vite we sent out for the Christmas Eve party.
And what is an e-vite?
It's a digital invitation. I sent it out in an email blast.
Not sure I understood much of that, but I'm guessing it doesn't mean a engraved note on the house stationery.
Afraid not.
It's unfortunate. I always took a special pride in our invitations to Whitley House. People kept them as a valued souvenir.
Times have changed.
Yes, they have. Fortunately, not always for the better.
Kenny.
We've been getting some great reviews on the website. Oh. Beautiful mansion. Love the byplay between Charles and Rosie. And this one, the new Charles Whitley, is a hunk.
A hunk of what, exactly?
Megan grins.
Anyway, whatever you're doing, keep it up.
Thank you.
Thank you. What is this?
Money from the tip jar. The cast splits it at the end of the day.
Oh. Well, in that case, would you care to join me for a meal of delicious pizza? This time it will be my treat.
That would be my pleasure, Charles. But first, you and I have something very important to do.
They walk out of a menswear store with bags.
I really didn't have to do this, Megan, but I will pay you back when I can.
Oh, consider it an early Christmas gift. Besides, we can't have you walking around like you're in the road company of Hello Dolly.
I don't mean to sound ungrateful, but are you absolutely sure that these dungarees are appropriate attire? They would be acceptable in one of my steel mills, but in a public street.
If the fashion police stop us, I will tell them it was my idea.
Wait, there's such a thing as that now.
They stand in a line for hot chocolate.
So how did you like playing Charles Whitley today?
I must say, I enjoyed it. Especially our banter. I don't recall ever having that kind of rapport with a young lady before.
Not even Eliza?
Oh, no. Eliza wasn't the sort to enjoy even a well-intentioned ribbing.
Well, she must have had many good qualities. You two were engaged to be married.
When one achieves a certain financial status, there are expectations. Grand house, a fine haberdashery, and a young lady like Eliza by your side.
You did love her, didn't you?
I was very fond of Eliza, but our marriage was to be one of a certain social purpose. She deserved more than I could give her, and I'm afraid love is something I never really had much time for.
Why would you say that?
You know my history as well as anyone. When my parents died, I was left pretty much entirely alone. Since then, I've just never really let myself get too close to anyone.
Why not?
It wouldn't hurt so much if I lost them.
You can't let the past control your life.
Exactly. Which is why I live for the future.
He walks on. A smile dances across Megan's face. They enter an antique store with brass lamps and knickknacks on shelves.
Well, I've talked more than enough about myself today. Tell me about you. Do you have a suitor?
A suitor?
Yes. Are you being courted?
Well, I don't know that I would call it courtship. We broke up about 6 months ago. You know what? I always say that, but that's not exactly true. What actually happened was that he left me for somebody else.
Well, that must have been difficult.
Well, let's just say I'm not in any rush to start dating anytime soon.
She looks at a rack of necklaces. She picks up one with a snowflake pendant.
Rosie always used to say true love is worth waiting for.
But how do you know when it shows up?
Time will tell, Miss Turner. Time will tell.
All right, everyone, it's time.
Come on, they're about to light the Christmas tree.
She puts down the necklace and runs out.
Come on.
He follows her to the doorway. In a town plaza, a crowd is gathered around a gazebo and tree.
Oh, thank you.
They step through the crowd.
Well, I still think it's a lot of bother.
Oh, I think it's a really special tradition. You said you wanted to live for the future. Maybe your future has Christmas in it. And besides, thank you, candy canes are good for the Christmas spirit.
Merry Christmas, Cutter Springs, and welcome to the annual Christmas tree lighting ceremony. So glad to see all of you here. So, without further ado, 5, 4, 3, 2,
one.
The tall tree lights up. Charles and Megan grin and applaud with the crowd.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry... Sing along.
I don't know the words.
What? Everybody knows this song.
About 1903.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
They smile and make eye contact, then look away. Charles and Megan walk together outside.
Thank you again for these.
Oh.
And for showing me the tree.
It wasn't a lot of bother.
I've just never been one for tradition. And it's like I said, I don't hold on to the past.
Well, I don't think it's about holding on to the past at all. I think it's about honoring our history and celebrating the passage of time. And then sharing that celebration with the people we love. That's what Christmas traditions mean to me.
All of them?
He looks up. She follows his gaze. Mistletoe hangs above them.
We better get going. We've got a big day tomorrow.
We do?
Mm-hmm. Another tradition, Christmas shopping. And you're gonna help.
I am?
A bird's eye view of the snow-covered town. Megan and Charles emerge from a toy store.
Thank you, Megan. How does one person have so many nieces and nephews?
Here. Smile.
She takes a selfie of them with her phone.
That's amazing. So that's a portable telephone device and a camera.
It has internet access, too.
I keep hearing about this internet. What exactly is it?
Oh, the internet is the World Wide Web. It connects everything.
Like a roadway.
Well, yeah, that was the idea. We have access to all the world's information, but we mostly use it to argue with strangers and send each other pictures of cats.
The future's a very interesting place.
An older couple.
Megan!
Prepare yourself, my parents.
Hi!
Hey. Hi!
Are we interrupting something, Meg? I told you we shouldn't butt in.
Craig, for goodness sakes, it's Christmas time. Tis the season to butt in. Are you going to introduce us, Megan?
I've been trying.
Hi, I'm Sharon. I'm Megan's mom. You must be the new Charles Whitney we keep hearing about.
Mrs. Turner, a pleasure to meet you.
Such manners.
Kiss his hand.
Mr. Turner.
I hear the museum's Christmas reenactment this year is terrific.
Oh, I must admit that's all thanks to Megan's talent. Now meeting her parents, I can see where she gets it from.
Can we have him bottled?
Charles and Mr. Turner carry coffees to a table.
So, you say you're from Cutter Springs. That's funny, because we know almost everyone in town, but we've never bumped into you before.
Charles travels a lot.
Yes. I've actually traveled quite a great distance to be here today.
Oh.
So, Megan, any word from the university?
Not yet. My final interview's this week.
Oh, well, honey, I wouldn't worry about it. With your PhD, you're a shoo-in.
I'm just not so sure I'm ready to leave the museum.
Well, you've done a wonderful job there, but don't you feel like it's time to spread your wings?
Turners have always been teachers. Kind of a family tradition.
So I've heard.
We better get going. Still have a lot of planning to do for the Christmas party.
Oh, well, we'll be there. And it's going to be even more special this year because of the Christmas moon.
I beg your pardon, did you say a Christmas moon?
You know when there are two full moons in the same month, we call it a blue moon? Well, when it happens in December, it's a Christmas moon. And it's happening on Christmas Eve, just in time for your party.
I'd better be going. Merry Christmas to you both.
Okay, love you.
The parents frown at each other.
Was it something I said?
Mr. Turner shrugs. Megan scurries after Charles.
Charles, what's wrong?
That telephone device of yours, can it look up dates?
Uh-huh.
December 18th, 1903.
The day you went missing?
It was a full moon that night. Was it the second one in the same month?
A Christmas moon.
And once at Christmas moon, true love will find you soon. It was engraved on the clock I was fixing for Eliza.
Do you think the clock had something to do with how you got here?
I know it makes absolutely no sense, but none of this does. I have a theory. I think if I'm to make it back to my own time, I have to do exactly the same thing again on the night of the Christmas moon.
That's Christmas Eve. That's only 4 days away.
I know. I need to find that clock.
Megan looks in a cabinet in the study.
I don't see it anywhere. Are you sure it's in here?
Yes, absolutely. It was right there on the mantle the night of the Christmas moon. Rosie must have moved it for cleaning or something.
Well, that was over 100 years ago.
I know, and I also know how ridiculous all this sounds with the magic moons and time travel clocks. I have lived my whole life according to logic and science and things that you can actually hold in your hand. Oh.
She slips and falls from a stepladder. He catches her in his arms.
Sorry. I would hate to lose you.
Got great news. Tomorrow's tour is sold out.
Kenny, we were looking for something.
Should I ask if I can help?
We were looking for this.
He shows a sketch of the Christmas clock in his notebook.
A clock?
It belonged to Charles Whitley. It was in this room.
You mean it's missing? Oh, this is terrible. When did you last see it?
1903.
Kenny blinks. They look at a computer.
Okay, we've got alarm clocks, shelf clocks, weather clocks, grandfather clocks, and cuckoo clocks, but I don't see anything about a Christmas clock.
Are you sure, Kenny? Maybe you're overlooking it.
Megan, I don't overlook. My first job here was cataloging the contents of the mansion. I spent almost a whole year in this basement. But you're welcome to look around if you want.
A dim room full of stuff.
Why all the excitement about this clock now anyway? Is it that valuable?
It is part of the Whitley legacy, and I thought it might be nice to have it on display at the Christmas Eve party.
Well, it's not here now, and if it ever was here, it probably got liquidated in one of those auctions years ago. Trust me, if it's not in my database, that clock is history.
Charles and Megan meet each other's gaze. Guests come in the museum.
We wish you a merry...
Megan knocks on an upstairs door.
Charles?
Come in.
He sits with his feet up reading a book.
Better get dressed. The tour starts in a few minutes. And it's a full house.
You'll have to do it without me.
What?
I've already wasted too much time. I should have been focused on the task at hand, which is getting myself back to 1903.
But you heard Kenny that... The clock is probably long gone.
Well, then there has to be some other way.
She closes her mouth and nods. He sits back in his chair. She picks up the pile of books next to him.
The Time Machine. A Christmas Carol. A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court.
They're all books on time travel. Maybe they know something that I don't.
She puts the books down.
Would it really be so bad if you stayed?
And I can't stay here. I have a fiance. I have a business. I don't belong here. And all the Christmas trees and candy canes in the world are not going to change that.
That's the silliest thing I've ever heard.
I beg your pardon?
This isn't the Charles Whitley I studied. The Charles Whitley I studied, he didn't care about where he belonged because he made everywhere belong to him. He was... fearless. He was an adventurer who took on the world by the time he was 14 years old.
Stories in a history book.
And every story starts somewhere. All of those started with you. And for the record, I think you do belong here. If for no other reason than I like having you around.
She looks down, then looks at him and sets her jaw.
So if you want to sit here and worry about how to get back to the past, you go ahead. But I have to live in the present. And I have a museum I'm pretty proud of, so I'm gonna go show it off.
She pulls a piece of paper from her apron pocket and tosses it on the pile of books. She turns and strides out of the bedroom. Charles picks up the paper, brow furrowed. It's a small white envelope. He opens it and reads the invitation to the Victorian Christmas. Megan walks downstairs in her maid uniform and spreads her arms wide, smiling at the group of guests.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas.
Welcome to Christmas at the Whitley Mansion. Unfortunately, Mr. Whitley won't be able to join us today.
Oh, we came to see him.
I know, I'm sorry. It's just that he's feeling a bit under the weather.
Now, Rosie, you shouldn't be fibbing to these nice people. You're fit as a fiddle and ready to play.
Now, I know you're related to Rosie. She's the only person on the planet that spoke to me like that.
The guests take their photos. Sun shines on the snow outside. Later, Charles steps over a velvet rope into the sitting room. He reaches for a glittery gold ornament on the tree. Behind him, Ned and Amber pass in their modern clothes.
Shakespeare.
Charles frowns and looks up. Megan in the kitchen with cooks.
Okay, so we have the game soup, cranberry dressing. Hi, and the plum pudding. Great, looks good.
Thanks.
What is all this?
This is a test run for the Christmas Eve party. Here, tell me what you think about this gravy.
She holds a spoon to his mouth and he tastes it.
Not too thick?
I've never tasted anything like it.
Sure you have. It's one of your chef's original Christmas recipes. He used to serve it every year at your Christmas Eve party.
I never went.
What?
Frederick's always invited me, but I always came up with an excuse. I'm not any good at parties. I don't know what to do or what to say.
So you don't even know your own Christmas traditions?
No.
Can I share one of my favorites with you?
Please.
Come here.
Her mom opens a door.
You're here. Merry Christmas.
Hi, Mom. Oh, hello.
Come in. Hey, everyone. Look who's here.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. I hope you enjoy the wine. I still have one or two bottles left that no one found.
Am I reading this right? 1899?
Do I smell gingerbread?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Megan ushers her mom to the kitchen. Charles stands before a large family in the living room. Outside, the family watches a man put an ornament atop a tall pine tree with a pole.
So they're really wagering on a Christmas ornament.
Uh-huh. It's a Christmas tradition. Everybody pays for a chance to go, and whoever actually puts the topper on the tree gets to choose which charity the money goes to.
Time's up!
Oh!
You, my sister's Fred. You want to give it a go?
Yeah.
No, I really shouldn't.
Come on, it's Christmas. Have some fun. I insist.
All right.
Charles aims the pole at the top of the tree.
There you go. Oh, he's such a gentleman. It's like he's from a different time. You could say that. It's nice to see that smile again. So, are you Charles a thing? It's more complicated than that. Well, do you like him? I do. Well, then it's not that complicated.
Mrs. Turner nods. Charles places the ornament atop the tree.
I did it! Yeah. First try, too! New champion tree topper!
Cool.
Did you see that?
He lifts Megan in a hug.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Didn't mean to be so forward.
Oh, it wasn't that forward.
I did it.
He beams at her. She grins and nods. They look at the tree. Later, Megan reads to the family in the living room.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring. Not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap.
My parents read this to me when I was a boy.
For a long winter's night.
Where did they live?
When out of the lawn.
They passed on a very long time ago.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. Thank you for inviting me into your home.
You're always welcome here, son.
Now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away,
dash away all.
Charles smiles warmly at Megan from across the room. She smiles back. On a large screen, a family photo album plays.
And this was the Christmas Nathan broke his leg tobogganing.
That tree came out of nowhere.
I'm sorry, this must be so boring for you.
On the contrary, it's like time travel without having to leave the sofa.
Now, here's a bit of history. This is Megan's great-great-grandmother.
Rosie.
This was at the wedding of Harold Moran, who you've all probably heard of. At one time, he owned half the town.
Why was Rosie at Harold Moran's wedding?
Oh, my mother said she became very close to the bride. She worked for her for years after Charles Whitley disappeared.
Well, who was the bride?
The young lady who had been engaged to Whitley.
Her name was Eliza.
Megan watches Charles for his reaction as a sepia photo of Eliza and Harold's wedding fills the screen. His lips part and he turns to Megan, then back to the couple in the photo. Megan follows Charles out of the Turner's house.
Charles, wait.
You knew this whole time and you didn't tell me?
I just didn't think you needed to know.
My fiancé marries my business rival, my sworn enemy, and you think I didn't need to know?
You said yourself you don't hold on to the past.
It's a figure of speech. Of course I hold on to the past. Everybody holds on to the past.
Then you should be happy for Eliza.
That she forgot me and married somebody else?
She didn't forget you, Charles. When I studied you, I studied her too. She waited for you. She spent a fortune trying to find you, but finally she had to give up. She had to move on with her life. She and Harold Moran were happily married for 66 years. They had 4 children together and 11 grandchildren. And by the time Harold retired, they had traveled the world and they lived to a very healthy old age together. So yes, you should be happy for her. If you ever felt anything for Eliza, you should be happy that she got to live this full and a wonderful life filled with happiness and love.
I'll go for a walk. Need to clear my head.
Charles.
Thank you.
For what?
Telling the truth.
He walks away, leaving her. The town tree glows alone in the square. Charles approaches it, hands in pockets.
For Christmas. You can count on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents.
Charles approaches an elderly man decorating a tree.
Merry Christmas.
And to you. Looks like you've got your work cut out for you.
But a beautiful Christmas tree makes so many people happy. Doesn't seem like work at all. Can you hand me a bow?
Sure.
Charles picks up a bow ornament from a box and hands it to the man.
Thanks.
So how long you been at this sort of thing?
Well, since I retired. Spent 40 years with Moran Steel.
Moran? You have my deepest sympathies.
No, why is that?
Looking for a cad like Harold Moran couldn't have been easy.
Well, he'd been long gone by the time I got there. Did you say cad? It's not a word you hear every day.
The shoe fits.
I don't know about that. I heard he was a decent, generous guy.
Generous?
Yeah, apparently he made a whole lot of money from some milling technique that he invented.
That he invented?
Yeah, Mr. Moran was famous for his charity work. We have Moran Community Center, Moran University, Moran Medical Center. He did a whole lot of good for this town. In fact, we're standing on some of it now. He and his wife donated the land for this park.
He points to a sign, the Harold and Eliza Moran Memorial Park.
So I don't know what you've heard, but I'm afraid you're wrong about Harold Moran.
Charles sighs.
For Christmas, if only.
He walks by the diner and looks in the window. He goes inside.
If only in my dream.
Dan sits at the counter alone.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Charles.
May I join you?
Dan smiles and pats the seat next to him. Charles takes off his jacket and sits.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Have you ever found yourself somewhere where you never thought you would be?
Charles suppresses a grin.
More than you can imagine.
See, Amber and I, we took this museum job for a season, thinking it may lead somewhere. But now I'm thinking maybe we just give it up.
Quit the museum?
Quit acting. I mean, I studied Strasbourg. She went to Juilliard. We've been at it a long time. We gave it our best shot, but maybe it's just time to try something else. All I know is we're not happy where we are.
Charles nods.
Well, I think that sometimes where we end up is out of our hands. But who we end up with, that's another matter. I think that almost any journey can have a happy ending if you're with someone you love.
What about your journey?
Oh. Been a very long trip. And I have a feeling that it isn't over yet.
Nighttime, the museum. The portrait of Charles smiles down at the present Charles. He looks down at his hand and makes a fist, studying the U-shaped scar on the back of the hand. He squints at the painting and the hand missing a scar. Daytime, a stone campus building. Megan walks in a hall with a woman in a cardigan.
It's pretty quiet around here. Most of the students have gone home for the holidays. So you'll be joining the faculty, I hear?
I hope so.
I'll let them know you're here.
Thank you.
Megan sits in a lobby decorated with Christmas wreaths and takes off her red coat. She stands and peers into a glass case of antique items. Brushes, shoes, cookware, and bags sit on glass shelves. Megan peruses the case, smiling to herself. She pauses and her lips part. The Christmas clock sits in the case. She reads the inscription on it.
Wind once at Christmas moon. True love will find you soon.
He'll just be a couple more minutes.
Excuse me, where did that clock come from?
Oh, the Christmas clock? Well, that's been here as long as I have. I think it was donated to the university years ago by someone who worked at the Whitley Mansion. Apparently, if you wind that clock just right, you'll find true love. I've wound that clock every week for years. Nothing.
Megan smirks.
I wonder, can I ask you a favor?
The museum. Charles stands in front of a mirror in his bedroom.
Megan, I'd like to apologize.
He shakes his head.
Megan, please accept my heartfelt apology. Megan, I'm sorry. Come in.
Kenny.
Tour starts in 10 minutes.
I'll be right there.
Kenny checks his watch.
9.
Charles turns back to the mirror, then away. He walks into the study and sees the Christmas clock on his desk. He strides over to it and picks it up. Megan comes in.
I hope that's the one.
Where did you find this?
Rosie gave it to the university. Maybe she thought we'd need it someday.
Megan.
I should have told you the truth all along. I guess this is my way of saying I'm sorry.
No, I'm the one that needs to apologize. You were only trying to protect me.
It's the Christmas moon tonight. So if you're right, this will take you back to 1903.
Maybe. It's only a theory.
I know you, Charles. You'll never forgive yourself if you don't try.
I'm not sure I'll ever forgive myself if I do.
She blushes.
The tour is about to begin.
I'd like to stay for a little while tonight. Come all this way. Would hate to miss my first Whitley Mansion Christmas party.
You're the guest of honor.
Megan! Tour!
Just one thing. If you do leave tonight, make sure to say goodbye before you go.
Charles nods. She smiles at him, giving a meaningful glance, and walks out. Charles gazes down at the clock in his hands, frowning. He sighs. Guests pull up to the museum and walk inside. A moon glows in the sky above. They mingle and dance in a hall where a band plays. Workers carry trays of champagne. Kenny darts among the partygoers, looking around frantically. He looks at his watch and scowls. Kenny finds Megan and Amber, wearing Victorian-style gowns and talking in the entryway.
Have you seen Charles yet?
He isn't down here?
No, and he's supposed to give a speech in 5 minutes. He'll throw off my whole schedule.
Charles appears at the top of the stairs, wearing a bow tie and buttoning the cuffs of his tuxedo. Megan stares as he saunters down the stairs. He pauses and smiles. She smiles back. Guests take photos from behind her.
Sorry I'm late. I need trouble with the tie.
Here, let me...
Thank you. It was like I haven't worn this suit in over 100 years. How's it look?
Like it was made for you.
Champagne, sir?
Charles takes a glass of champagne.
Shall we?
Champagne, man?
Thank you.
Megan takes a glass.
On behalf of Museum Director Megan Turner, I'd like to bid you welcome to the Whitley Museum's Christmas Eve party. I hope you're all having a wonderful time tonight. As you know, this is our museum's biggest fundraiser of the year. And thanks to a successful campaign led by our director, Megan Turner, I'm happy to announce that we have broken last year's record. And with your generous help, this is going to be the Whitley Museum's best year ever. And now it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you the host of tonight's party, the owner of the Whitley Mansion, and the master of the house, Mr. Charles Whitley.
Charles and Amber, dressed as Eliza, walk arm in arm to the stage. He kisses her hand. Megan watches from the crowd, clapping.
Thank you very much. And thank you all for being here tonight and making this a very special party at Whitley Mansion. You know, for many years, members of my household staff held a Christmas Eve party of their own. And every year I was invited, and every year I never went. Frankly, I didn't know what I was missing. But now I do. I even discovered a few things this Christmas season. For example, did you know that people can actually change? It's true. Some of us, most of us, okay, me, hold on to things from their past that keep us from moving on with our life. Old rivalries, jealousies, disappointments. And sometimes even things that are just too painful to remember at all. But maybe Christmas is about forgiving. Forgiving each other, forgiving ourselves. And maybe the only thing that's really truly important is where we are now, with friends and family, old and new, people we love, cherishing Christmas memories we have, making new ones to share together. And so my Christmas gift to you is just this one thought. Remember your past because it's what brought you here.
don't be afraid to embrace your present. Because if you live in it with hope and kindness and love, it's a great place to be.
Megan inhales and smiles. She blinks tears from her eyes and claps. Charles leaves the stage and Kenny speaks again.
And now, as is the tradition here at Whitley Mansion, Mr. Whitley will dance with his fiancée, Miss Eliza Parker.
Yeah, I had this dance.
Why, Mr. Whitley, I'd be honored.
He leads Amber to the dance floor and spins her to face him. She puts her hand on his shoulder and he puts his hand on her waist. They join their other hands and sway back and forth to the music together. Charles catches Megan's eye and smiles. She returns the smile. The full moon above the museum brightens and clouds drift across it. Megan walks next to Amber.
You were great out there.
Aw, thanks. This is such a wonderful party, Megan.
Oh. I thought Charles was with you.
Oh, I haven't seen him. Excuse me.
She's right, you know. You were great out there.
Well, it's not Shakespeare.
It is when you do it.
What are you talking about?
Look, I know that this isn't exactly what we set out to do with our lives. And I know that sometimes I make fun of what we're doing. But the truth is, when I'm with you, it always feels like opening night.
Aw, Dan.
Just thought you should know. You're my favorite leading lady, and I love you.
He kisses her cheek.
Oops. Hope none of the guests saw that.
She smiles. He carries a tray away. She picks up a phone.
Hello?
Her face breaks into a smile. Megan looks around the house.
Hi, happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Mr. and Mrs. Turner.
Oh, honey. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Oh.
Merry Christmas, Meg.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, what a wonderful party, sweetheart.
Thank you.
So, how did it go?
Did they offer you the job at the university?
Yes, they did.
Oh, congratulations, honey.
I didn't accept.
What?
It's not what I want to do with my life, Dad. I love this museum. I love being part of the living history of this place. I know it's not your type of education, but I think I can really make a difference. I have so many ideas for the future here. Interactive exhibits, holographic characters from history.
Honey, are you sure about this?
I am. And I know I'm disappointing you, and I'm sorry, but I just...
Disappointing? Hardly.
This is the best gift you could have given us. Our daughter, happy, doing exactly what she wants. No parent could ask for more.
Besides, we've got enough teachers in the family as it is.
Oh, but we still get a discount on tickets, right?
Always, Mom.
Oh, nice.
Oh, excuse me.
Okay.
Enjoy the party.
She looks beautiful.
Mary hoists her skirt and goes upstairs. She knocks on Charles' door.
Charles?
She looks in the bedroom and doesn't go in. She goes into the study, where the Christmas clock still sits on the desk.
You were gonna say goodbye.
Why?
He stands behind her. She turns.
But I thought...
I finally figured out why that clock was broken in the first place. Whoever had it before must have found their true love and decided to stay put. Sounds like a good idea to me. Kind of insurance policy.
He removes the clock part.
I have to think of the future, you know.
He closes the back of the clock and puts it on the mantle. Mary's eyelids flutter.
Oh, and before I forget, traditionally, you're not supposed to open Christmas presents till midnight. Then I've never been much for tradition.
Oh, Charles.
May I?
He opens a box containing the snowflake necklace. He fastens it around her neck.
It sounds like Harold and Eliza had a very good life together. She must have found a love with him that, if I'm being honest, she never would have found with me. If I'd gone back, I might have taken that from them. And that's not fair. They deserve their happiness.
Megan faces him.
So do we.
She touches the necklace at her throat. They kiss in front of the mantle, then smile at each other. Downstairs, they walk into the party arm in arm. Dan and Amber walk by.
You're not going to believe this.
Our agent called, and we're booked to play the leads in the Road Company of Taming of the Shrew this spring. Congratulations.
What do you know? It is Shakespeare.
Shall we dance?
Kenny talks to guests.
He's a pretty good Charles Whitley, isn't he? You know, I'm the one that found him.
Kenny smiles smugly and sips champagne. On the dance floor, Charles and Megan slow dance.
You know, now that I'm gonna stay, I'll have to find some kind of way to make a living. What about your portable telephone? Maybe I can invent a better one. Or your computing device, I could make it work faster.
You can't help yourself, can you, Charles?
What do you mean?
Always thinking about your future?
There's a difference now. Not just my future anymore. It's ours. That is, if you'll share it with me.
Mr. Whitley, that's very forward of you.
You're right. Let's just take it one step at a time. What do you do on New Year's Eve?
They kiss passionately, and their faces stay almost touching as they dance. Upstairs in the study, the Christmas clock glitters on the mantle. Its hands move one stroke to snow midnight.